You are listening to Dishin' and Swishin', the world of women's hoops, on hoopfeed.com.
Hey everybody, it's David Siegel welcoming you to one of the great rites of passage each year. The NCAA tournament comes, and the pre-tournament Dishin' and Swishin' roundtable goes on the air, and I am really happy to have a great group assembled tonight to kick around some of the good, the bad, and some of the players, coaches, and teams of this year's NCAA tournament. So first, let me take a second, and I want to introduce you to each of the people on our panel tonight. We have ESPN commentator LaChyna Robinson, the AP's Doug Feinberg, Seattle Times' Jada Evans, Angela Taylor of Game Changers Live, Warren Day of U Hoops, and me. Yours truly. You know, because you can't pick up Twitter these days and not read about Nerd City and the Aguamake sisters and the romp through the Big 12, the Pac-12 that Stanford just did. So, Jada, ask you first and foremost, the Pac-12 is not overly represented, and there was still, despite how good Stanford is, people have commented about the weakness of the West Coast. Is that a fair comment to make at this point? I mean, should we just be looking at Stanford on its own merits and not even discussing where they stand in regard to the Pac-12 and the rest of the West Coast?
I guess it's a yes and no kind of answer. Yes, Stanford is definitely on its own platform. You can't say that the Pac-12 is anything like the Big East, and where you have a few teams where they might. Maybe Connecticut wins all the time, but at the same time, you have some challengers here and there, as you saw this season. You can't say that about the Pac-12, but it is definitely disrespect in my opinion, as far as what it does have as far as second and down through 12. When you did get to conference play, there were a lot of types of storylines and upsets, and there is a lot of talent. There's six new coaches, so it's refreshed this season, and that's what's hurting them nationally, and where people are justified to kind of disrespect them in a sense is the fact that the non-conference schedule wasn't strong. If some of the teams would kind of give up scheduling some of the cupcakes, the D2s that they do, then there wouldn't be any right for somebody to kind of come in and talk a lot about them. But like I said, there's still a lot of time, and there's new coaches, and, I think that there was maybe one more team that probably could have been able to sneak in there. But, you got to win so that nobody can take it away from you.
Angela, as a person that has followed Stanford, being the alum that you are, is their backcourt and the other complementary players beside the Aguamakes going to be sufficient for them to really make a shot at the title realistic?
That's a great question. I think, for Tara and her staff heading into the tournament, depending on the matchups, you really are concerned about the consistency of the backcourt. And I think that since Candace Wiggins graduated, that has been a question mark for Stanford when they come and play against quick teams that have the ability to put a lot of pressure on the guards and pick up full court. You've seen that Tony Kukinis has really been playing well, really since the end of last year, but consistently toward the latter half of the Pac-12 play and in the tournament. And she's going to be key. She has to be able to execute the offense to be able to penetrate, take some pressure off the Aguamakes, and be able to set up some shooters. They need to be able to score for the perimeter to take some of the double teams away from their post play. And you've seen a lot of teams in the Pac-12 doubling and tripling the sisters in the second half of the season, and that's going to put a lot more pressure on the guards.
As we continue, let me also welcome Wendy Park, Ball Times, to the group. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, Dave.
Glad you could get in and join us, and we will get you involved shortly. As we continue looking at Fresno, Oren, your area in particular with DW Hoops, of course, is the Blue Devils of Duke, and they got the bizarre scheduling. Michelle Vopel in particular was just going nuts about it, where they, instead of being put in the vacant slot, ended up probably facing Vanderbilt on Vanderbilt home court, where they've lost one game all season. talk for a second, if you could. How has the Blue Devils adjusted to the loss of Jackson and Jackson and playing with such a short bench now? Is that going to have an impact in the short setting of a tournament?
I don't think it's going to have as much of an impact as people might think. That certainly losing Riche is tough, that she was a slasher, and she was also one of Duke's best shooters. She was really consistent. In not having her, they're certainly going to have to rely on other players for more scoring, but Duke really has a very balanced lineup in terms of having four players that are in scoring in double digits. Another loss that really hurts them that really hasn't been discussed is that of Chloe Wells. They lost Chloe Wells, the guard, to academics just after the first of the year, didn't have her for the conference season. What Duke's really going to have to look at is they're very effective with the 1-2 punch of Elizabeth Williams and Allison Verneray on the floor together, the two bigs. Certainly those two players would have to play well in tandem if Duke can make it all the way to face Stanford. As far as Vanderbilt goes, assuming that Duke gets past Stanford, and certainly Middle Tennessee will have a big bunch of fans there for Vanderbilt, if Duke can make it through, they'd certainly need contributions from their bigs. Coach McCallie has coached on that floor at Vanderbilt. That in her first season at Duke, they went there and lost a game, very competitive up till the end. Not with these current players, but they should be able to. I think they should be able to adjust to that. Coach P should be able to let them know what they've got in store for that sort of weird geometry.
One of the things about this region, looking at the Fresno region, is we definitely have an issue here with the frequent discussions about teams possibly playing against lower seeds on their home court. That's one with Duke and potentially we're looking at Oklahoma St. John's, with St. John's the 3 playing in Norman on their court. Hey, Doug, you saw St. John's at the Big East tournament, and they have really been playing so well towards the end of the season. Now, is an away court in Norman going to bother them if an away court at Storrs didn't?
You know, it's really funny you asking that question, Dave, because I actually just talked to Kim Barnes-Rico, their coach, today, and had a story out about that exact question and all these – the 6, 2, and 3 seeds that are unfortunately probably going to have to play a home team on their court in the second round, or in Delaware's case, the first round. And for St. John's, at least, it's the third year in a row potentially they'd have to do this. They had to play at Florida State 2 years ago and lost in overtime. Had to play at Stanford last year and lost. And now potentially going to have to play at Oklahoma in the second round. And Kim was honest about it. She goes, look, I don't enjoy having to play teams on their home court, but if it helps grow the game, and there's really nothing we can do about it, so you do the take the hand you're given. Obviously, they beat UConn at UConn, ending their 99-game winning streak there, and they're not afraid of anybody. I mean, if you can beat UConn at UConn and end that streak, you can beat Oklahoma at Oklahoma or whoever you have to play on the road. So they're not completely scared, but the good news for her is next year they're hosting the first two rounds, so that streak of them playing on someone's home court in the opening two rounds will definitely end next year. But it's – what can you do? I mean, I talked to Coach McCallie also today, and she's like, look, same deal with us 2 years ago or 3 years ago at Michigan State. You only can play the team that they give you, and it's not the greatest thing for them to have to do that. It's, I guess we're talking before, you and I have China, you and I have talked at the Big East tournament, how it's kind of like the game needs to grow, and is it fair? I mean, UConn played on its home court for the Big East tournament and went out and won it. But we're not at a point yet in this game where you can have neutral sites or have a situation where teams won't have this unfortunate where you have to play somebody on their home court in the first two rounds, which I think Vanderbilt, Oklahoma, Iowa State were all like 44-5 at home this year. So clearly that's not a situation you want to be in if you're a visiting team. But yeah, St. John's is definitely road test this year. They're not afraid of anybody, and I wouldn't be shocked to see them come out of that part of the bracket down there and potentially maybe see Duke in the regional semifinals, and who knows what happens. Maybe get to the regional final against the Stanford.
Hey, Wendy, Your area, you're down south there. Can you talk for a second about South Carolina and the turnaround that Dawn Staley has done with that program, how she's got them in the tournament and a number five seed?
Yeah, it's really interesting given the fact that they've had high-profile recruits, you know, leave that program in the last couple of years, including Kelsey Bone, who's now at Texas A&M. They beat Vanderbilt twice. And of course, they won at Tennessee for the first time. It's just a real gritty team that exemplifies, Dawn's, the style of play that Dawn had at Virginia and as a coach starting out at Temple. It's just a really good, team-oriented team. Markeisha Grant is a terrific shooter, and she just clutch in that Tennessee game, hitting big shots down the stretch when they were trailing at Thompson Bowling, and that's a pretty rare thing for a team to do that. They played well in the SEC tournament. It's a little bit of a surprise. That's a team I thought was going to, finish in the middle of the pack, and they did technically in terms of being, I think, the sixth seed in the SEC tournament. But they certainly impressed everybody down here. And it was a real tough decision for Coach of the Year in the league between her and Tom Collin of Arkansas, who won it.
Things that I've really looked at this year for some reason is the seeding of the lower teams, and I think some of the bottom seeds sort of got ripped off, and that they really didn't deserve to be 16s, and there were others that were higher that really could have been moved down, even if it was just to influence geography and the like. But Hampton is a team that you and I have both were tweeting about, that we both agreed really didn't seem like a 16 seed, and they kind of got a raw deal having to get Stanford in that first round.
Yeah, I mean, I've covered their team. I think David Six has done a fantastic job there in his time, but I was a little put as well, especially considering the fact that, for example, a Navy ends up a 15 seed, and they lost to Hampton, who is a team that Hampton handled thoroughly during the season. So to me, I thought it was low, and I think we're seeing this trend where certain conferences end up kind of in that 16th slot, and I think it needs to be reevaluated. I mean, we saw Hampton give Kentucky a good run in the NCAA tournament last season, and it just really, I thought, opened people's eyes to what some of the top teams in those conferences that may not be look as challenging on paper can really do in the postseason.
Yeah, if you look at the Sagarin rankings, they're 54.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty high ranking for a 16 seed.
Right, and they had a fairly challenging non-conference schedule as well. Was big.
Yeah. And also a team that's only 15 miles from Old Dominion. I know that when they played Duke and Cameron 2 years ago, they brought about 1,000 fans. I can only imagine how many they'll bring to Old Dominion this weekend.
Well, it'll be certainly interesting to see. Now, let's take a second and jump across the bracket, straight across to the Kingston, Rhode Island bracket. And I want to go to Jada here because there is a definite presence representation here. Now, you've got two teams there that really intrigue me that I think could possibly be potential upset winners in the first round, and I'd like your thoughts. Gonzaga plays against Rutgers in Spokane, and then San Diego State hosts LSU, but in Baton Rouge. But both of those teams, even though they're 11 and 12 seeds, have a lot going for them. Games.
I got to tell you, Gonzaga, if I'm really upset if I didn't correct you on this one, it's Spokane, not Spokane. obviously it was going to happen with them hosting and with the way that they've been selling out all season long. They had a record, season ticket holder count this season, and so I mean they just really pack it in, and it's just really a great place to watch basketball over there. They have a great environment, great community support. So I knew that, you know, somebody was going to, just like UCLA did last season. I mean, you know, somebody was going to go in there, and it's going to be an unfair advantage in that sense as far as atmosphere goes. The one thing that's drastically different, though, is that there's no Courtney Vandersloot this season. So it's going to be Rutgers pressure defense and just the physical play that they have or that they do play is going to be really rough for Gonzaga. You know, one of the things that the team and some of the seniors, especially Kayla Standish and Caitlin Redmond, you know, they're really good scorers and whatnot, but one of the things that they've been working on through the years as they've been advancing to the tournament is strength and, you know, getting you know, their physical strength going and ready to play against some of these physical teams from the East Coast. And so it's intriguing kind of matchup, but you know, I still kind of maybe think that Rutgers is still going to get the edge with their style of play. And you know, the same with LSU right now. I go back and forth on that one, but it is interesting how, you know, we were talking about, you know, the seating and just the attendance, and it's just one of those things, you know. I mean, it looks good on television if you've got that crowd in, and you just have to play through it. That's just one of the things in women's basketball that you've got to play through.
Well, the other thing that really I find interesting in this bracket is I was saying that Miami has, I believe, over 7,500 miles in travel, and Connecticut has 200. So that's something that will certainly be interesting to see if that has an impact on Miami as they go back and forth around the country. And that's not even counting if they decide to go back to Florida before going up to Rhode Island, depending on what's going on at school there. Oren, can you talk for a second about the Miami backcourt, though, and for anybody that hasn't seen them, what people should be looking for out of that duo?
Yeah, they're absolutely a terrific duo of Shanice Johnson and Raquana Williams. Both of them can just fill it up. Johnson can really take it to the hoop. Williams is a little bit more likely to shoot the three. They can get to the line. They're both excellent free throw shooters. As a tandem, I think they're really tough to stop. Johnson has scored 500 points season. Williams is, I think, just a few away. And it was sort of baffling, their performance in the ACC tournament against Wake Forest. I don't think that represents their season. Maybe Wake wanted it more. Certainly we saw a lot of that at the ACC tournament this year. I think if Miami comes up against Rutgers, that's going to be a wonderful clash of styles. And I think if they they would end up against Gonzaga, that would be a wonderful game where both teams will run and gun.
Wendy, Kentucky. I love Matthew Mitchell. Love the way he's done with the team. Love the team that he's got assembled. But I'm actually looking at this and wondering how far that they can advance with those teams that they are facing. They've been so inconsistent towards the end of the season.
Yeah, you don't know what Kentucky team is going to show up. They had a great run there, and then they went to Knoxville and got just wiped out, and they had a really bad losing streak that included a really bad loss to Alabama, which finished dead last in the SEC. You know, they altered their lineup a little bit. We're bringing Amber Smith in off the bench, and they played a little bit better by the time they got to the SEC tournament, but they still showed some signs there that they're still not quite where they were earlier in the season. I think, you know, that's going to be one of the big, you know, the big ones is what, you know, what's Kentucky really going to do when they're out there? And now they're sort of a hunted team. They've been kind of an upstart here the last couple of years. They got to the Elite Eight a couple of years ago. Can they handle, you know, what comes with being a number two seed in the SEC regular season champion? I don't think anybody really knows the answer to that right now. They certainly have the talent, and you know, I like what they do when they get their press going, and it is 40 minutes of you know what when they can pull it off. But they haven't really been that kind of a team for most of the month of February.
Well, and with perfect timing, as I was just going to ask about one of his favorite programs, I'm pleased to welcome the guru Mel Greenberg to the group. Mel, how are you tonight?
Fine. Dinner was fine. The wake was fine. And you know who I was out with, right? So
anybody that doesn't know, Mel was out with Temple tonight. So.
I was out with one of the last four or whatever the hell they're calling it. So anyhow, hi there.
So Mel, I was just about to ask Doug, but I will defer to you on talking about Princeton, and specifically what anybody that has not seen out of this Ivy League team, the first one to be ranked, what their team is like and how they're going to fare. At least their first game against Kansas State, we know that the second game is going to be very, very tough.
Yeah, well, she told me it would be an honor to play in that game. The first game will be big enough for them because they're looking for their first ever win and second Ivy win that doesn't involve misseedings and injuries. So, as you all vets know what I'm talking about there in the famous Stanford game. Well, you know, it's a very balanced team. They pressed the ball. Obviously, the key to them is Naveen Rashid, their junior. They have the moment they're just coming out of all this. I'm blanking on names, but they got Lauren Edwards, Devonta Allgood comes back. Two of their other mainstays alongside, and they played defense. They couldn't play defense against Delaware, as Doug will tell you, because anytime they were going to press, Delaware would just go right over their heads in the Delagon. So it kind of didn't work there. But you know, they played a big time schedule over the last couple of years. We even talked about the possibility if they tripped up in the Ivies of becoming an at large team. You know, anything is in the Ivy schedule, we think you can't end up losing the Ivies by just one game short of the playoff. It's usually two. So now you're tagged with a couple bad losses.
And, Doug, the other team that's worth noting is a mid-major in there, of course, in that bracket is Green Bay. And they have one player that Rebecca Lobo, I thought, was absolutely going nuts trying to describe to people. And, you know, Julie White with the bizarrely spelled name and the team that Matt Boland has assembled, you know, is going back to Iowa State and gets another crack at them on their own turf.
Yeah, you know, she is something to watch. Julie is special. I mean, she can score from all over the court. I think she had 12 steals in a game earlier in the year. I mean, she is what makes that team go. They actually have a chip on their shoulder, which is funny. I mean, you wouldn't think a mid-major would really have a chip in the sense of the seeding, but they're a 7 seed having to play at Iowa State, and I know that they were not happy about that. They have one loss in the season, similar to Delaware, but they're seeded in a 7 instead of being a little higher. And I think they had a nice run last year to the Sweet 16, and it may be tough to do it again this year. They lost two great players to graduation last year, and I just don't think they have the same horses they had in their run last year. Now, beating Iowa State on Iowa State's home court is going to be a very tough first-round game for them. And then if they do that, they're going to have to probably beat Kentucky in the second round, which is another tall task, so to speak. But they're good. They're excited. I mean, Matt Boland does a tremendous job at that school. I'm surprised he hasn't moved on somewhere else. I know he tried and didn't work out in Wisconsin, but I got to think he's one of the top coaches in the country that probably most people, fans, don't know about if you're not a basketball insider. But year in and year out, Green Bay has been one of these teams that has been consistent, like a Gonzaga, who just knows how to win and does the right things every year. And I think they have a tough draw for maybe making a deeper run like they did last year, but they're exciting to watch. They're fun, and Julie really is, I think, probably – I mean, you have Deladon in there as well for mid-major top players, but I think she's probably the second-best mid-major player in the country right now.
And, Lieutenant, you had the privilege of joining us up in Connecticut, as I use privilege loosely, but you did get to see the good Connecticut team, the team that played like the championship-caliber team that earned their Big East title. So tell me, having watched that tournament and seeing when they're clicking and Mosqueda Lewis is hitting like she is Connecticut – going to be troubled by anybody in their pursuit of the Final Four?
I don't think so. I mean, if they are, it would be a really upset Miami team. But I really see Connecticut playing great basketball from here on out. Obviously, the announcement he's coming here recently in terms of the stress fracture. I don't know exactly if we can go on record or you know what they're saying exactly, but to Hayes is a concern. Short on their rotation, but I'll tell you this. This is what I like about this Connecticut team when they're playing well. Dolson, when she is rebounding, it's a totally different team. I think she is a double-double every night if that's what she wants to do. I love the fact that she doesn't take herself too seriously. She laughs during games. Gino gets upset, but I think that's why she plays so loose in big games. So I think she is a huge key. But I think people also underestimate Stokes and how good she is off the bench. People say, well, Dolson is all they have inside, but Stokes played a tremendous game against Duke. And I think she's got potential. It's just about whether or not she can do it consistently. But, you know, I was just really impressed with Kelly Ferris. I mean, you don't hear her name enough, but she is a terrific defender. She's very smart. Yeah, she can't shoot the basketball like you would want her to, so Gino's been subbing her out pretty quickly and getting Mosqueda Lewis in there to give him some offense. But to me, it's a little thing to this. Into this time of year, and the player that is going to shut someone down and get you the 50-50 balls and the hustle. And so I think she's going to be a key as well. But you're right. I mean, Mosqueda Lewis, she set the tone in the Big East tournament. I just think as a freshman, watching the way she got in the game and was not afraid to just take over the scoring. I mean, she's stepping behind screens, around screens, maneuvering, I mean, to hit the three-point shot, and that's really what carried them during different stretches on the offensive end. And then, you know, again, depending on what happens with Hayes and her stress fracture, Doty is always questionable, you know, because she has just been through so much. But you just can't underestimate the team because we've seen them play really great basketball.
You know what? I would have thought that they could have been picked off a lot easier before that Big East tournament, because I had always wondered, looking at that group, was who was going to be the person that would step up when the big shot was necessary. But it wasn't just the shots that she made in that tournament. It was the fact that after they lost to Notre Dame, she just very matter-of-factly the next week said that you're going to see a different team out there for the tournament. She made the claim. She stood by it. She said she knew that the team was going to play differently and went out and she made sure that they did. So, you know, that was a performance of some of the great UConn freshman-type performances of years gone by. And I think Kingston is going to be theirs. They're certainly going to have the Husky faithful traveling with them. So they will then probably head into another rematch with Notre Dame as we shift to Raleigh. Or will they? Because it seems that it's gotten really trendy to pick Maryland among some of the pundits to come out of this conference. And let's start by hitting the Terps and talking for a second about what they're bringing to the table. And, Oren, people realizing how good Alyssa Thomas is, or is she just barely scratching the surface, though?
You know, I think she had a great season, but I think she still even has room for improvement. She's just an incredible player. She can go off for points. She's a wonderful rebounder. I mean, leading in scoring and rebounding on a team that is, or second in rebounding on their team. On a team that's an absolutely wonderful rebounding team. Maryland is big on offensive rebounds. If they don't make their first shot, they're going to get you with those second chance points. For Thomas to be able to drive, for them to be able to switch out Tiana Hawkins and Lynetta Kaiser, who was the ACC sixth player of the year, for her to be a senior, former all-ACC player coming off of the bench, is an amazing boost. She only started one game this season. Hawkins, averaging over 9 rebounds, split evenly between offensive and defensive rebounds. And one player that we felt was forgotten was Lauren Mincy, who's come back from an ACL injury to be just an incredible three-point threat. for her to be out there and do what she did this season was amazing. The conference named her as honorable mention All-ACC. We had her as second team.
Jada, yeah. Cal, tell me why Cal deserves to be an 8 seed, and they shouldn't be either higher or lower, because I've heard people talking about them in so many different directions as if they were the second coming because they needed somebody else big in the West, or that they've been used as the argument for teams that are overrated. So what is it with Cal that makes them so polarizing, and what should we really be looking at with Cal?
I think it's their rebounding. You really got to watch out with that. They have a bunch of post players that are just super impressive to me. The thing about them is obviously they don't have any kind of tournament experience, and this is a young team. They don't have any seniors, but it's just an exciting team. I mean, whether you're talking about, Jennifer Brandon or Talia Caldwell, Alicia Clarendon, and then you've got a point guard in Brittany Boyd, who sometimes she makes that pass or that move that you're kind of like, what are you thinking? But then, there's times where she'll make moves and do things. The other night in the tournament, she almost had a triple-double with some of the moves. And, she got 10 rebounds and, had all the points. And, I mean, she can be really impressive in the way that she runs a team. So I think they'll prove it in this. This is something that they've wanted just as a program for a while, and even though these players don't have the experience, I think that they can get Iowa. It's very winnable, and it's just one of those things where they're just going to have to show it. I can understand people, again, it's that whole Pac-12 thing, and they don't have any kind of wins. There's not a single sexy win there. In non-conference, I think they're about 6 points. The wins that they did have against, or the games that they did play against some of the teams, they were played in close, but they didn't get the win. They took Stanford to overtime in the first meeting, but of course they were, kind of killed basically in the tournament conference and in the second meeting. So, that's what it is. It's just they need to get over that hump, and hopefully, just for the conference sake and I guess my reputation, maybe it happens in the tournament.
Oh, Jada, your reputation's always good with us. You know that. especially when you're picking a team that then has to play Notre Dame in the next round.
Yeah, and I surely expect Skylar to take Brittany to school.
Angela, Notre Dame, experience, leadership, clearly one of the top teams in the country. Why are people so hot on Maryland being able to knock them off? I mean, I look at Notre Dame and I see, in my opinion, probably the one team that has a shot at knocking off Baylor.
Yeah, you know what? I think that when you see Notre Dame, they're so well balanced, and everyone hears about, obviously, Skylar Diggins, and she's had an incredible season, but they have such a balanced attack. And if you look at teams across the country, they're the type of team that we used to talk about with Connecticut. They're inside, they're outside, one of the best executing teams that I've seen play. They are a joy to watch because every player on that roster, the 5, 6, 7 deep comes in and make great decisions with the ball. Very difficult team to beat because they don't beat themselves. They have the ability to get out in transition and execute. They have the ability to score in the half court against different defenses. And they have a lot of different players that have the ability to put the ball in the basket. So I think they're going to be a very difficult team to play. But as Jada mentioned, I look at their bracket. If you look at the Raleigh region, there's a lot of great rebounding teams and a lot of quick defensive teams. So it's really going to be interesting to see before they get – I actually think that Cal could give them some difficulty if Cal gets past Iowa because they have such depth at the guard position. They have the ability to command the boards and rebound well. Which is very similar to a Maryland team if they have to face them as well in that final. So I think that Notre Dame, obviously they've had a great season. They have some great players. I would be surprised to see them upset, but I do think that a team like the Maryland can give them some difficulty.
Yeah, you see Maryland with a plus 14 rebounding margin, but also turning it over 17 times. So I'm sure that Notre Dame could capitalize on some of those.
Capitalize on that, right. Yeah, definitely a much better defensive team than you imagine.
Okay, and now, Wendy, I made the comment earlier today that I don't know who Andy Lander is really ticked off, but he has been sent to BCS Conference Hell, as he has St. Bonaventure, Florida Gulf Coast, and Marist all in his pod. And meanwhile, poor Arkansas, two seeds below them, is sitting there laughing, looking at that group and looking at their group. So who's got a better shot at coming out of there, Arkansas or Georgia?
Well, Arkansas would have to play probably Texas A&M in College Station. I'm not sure that's a better deal, and there certainly would be, you know, an emotional component there with, you know, Gary Blair having been in Arkansas and Tom Cullen having been his assistant there. So I don't know. You know, I think Georgia probably got, you know, at least geographically they got what they wanted, but the other teams, you know, I haven't seen Marist this year. I've heard a lot about St. Bonaventure. I'm not really sure, you know, how good they really are being down here. But, you know, Georgia's had a little bit of an up-and-down year. They had some really solid wins, had a bad loss to Florida down the stretch, and then lost in their first SEC tournament game. So, you know, they haven't played for a couple of weeks, but I think they probably deserved a number four seed, and I think that's going to be a really tough game against Marist, and I really will be intrigued to see what Florida Gulf Coast is all about. There's been a lot that's been written about them, but we haven't really seen too much of them. So I think that's a pretty well balanced pod down there in Tallahassee.
Well, the Raleigh Conference can also be called the A-10 Invitational, with St. Bonaventure's the regular season champion and Dayton, the tournament champion, both being sent there. So, Mel, you know, being the A-10 pundit that you are, tell us why Dayton managed to come back to knock off St. Bonaventure, well, knock off the rest of the A-10 and win the conference tournament title, and what that sets them up for the NCAA tournament.
Well, it's certain combination people I cover and friends of mine who were crying over their crab legs a little while ago. Dayton's not a bad team, and they play very good, very cohesive, but Jim Jabir's done a very good job there. But Temple went into Dayton, won a great game there at a time that they were really where the season was on the brink. And then Temple kind of just didn't show up against Dayton. Almost won the game at the finish, you know, layup right on the rim. If it goes in, we'd be having a whole different discussion here. But, you know, he's done a very nice job with them. What happened to Bonnie's is Bonnie's fell real, you know, behind in the title game real deep. It may have been, they were having such a great year, but we've all seen it. I mean, I think most of us have been around the horn that, you know, you're going along, you're doing things no one expected, you're having a grand time. You're not maybe playing in a killer conference like the Big East or whatever. Now the moment comes, you know, that you go for your crowning glory and you can kind of separate them from Delaware in that, you know, Drexel gave them a little run in the CAA, but, you know, obviously you have Belladon, so it's going to be a deal breaker. But they hit that wall. You know, now they came back and almost won the game, St. Bonnie's, but Dayton found a way to hold on. So those three teams are very close together. That's why we kind of thought Temple got slighted a bit, because if you looked at the three of them in that conference, some of you guys, I think, have been through there. And actually, some of you guys have seen them play live. It's more than some committee people did, but that's another discussion. So, they can be interesting. Last year they lost to Penn State. They drew Penn State, you know, to start out in their first tournament. A lot lower seed. So it'll be interesting. I don't know if it can go that far, but, you know, they have a kid that's on the WNBA people were looking at, and Justin Graterman has been through, smooth center. You may have expected your time of 1 year ago or so, Angela, evaluated her, so for the future. And that's kind of the book on the flyers right now.
Doug, I'm going to ask you about the inside and outside of it. Texas A&M comes in perhaps being overlooked a little bit, with 10 losses, but still earning that number 3 seed, playing at College Station. Yeah, they are certainly going to be a team that's interesting, and as we had mentioned, a potential matchup against future SEC rival Arkansas and Blair's old stomping grounds at Arkansas. And then also Florida Gulf Coast is the new team, the new kid on the block, first year D1, and they're the 3-point shooters. So talk for a second, if you would, Doug. You know, the inside style of A&M, the pound people, and then Gulf Coast is totally a different style. Both of them could make for some entertaining moments in this region.
Yeah, I definitely think they can make very entertaining moments in the region. I mean, I can't remember the last time a defending national champion was not really talked about at all as having any chance to sort of win defend its crown in the NCAA tournament on the women's side. I mean, usually we're talking Connecticut or maybe Tennessee once in a while, although not recently. So there's always that thought, but it's been a while since a team like A&M won the title, and then the next year you're like, well, they really have no chance to defend themselves. But they've been struggling all season long a little bit. Their Kelsey Bone has been somewhat inconsistent at times for them, and if she gets going inside and can establish herself, they may have a strong inside presence that can give them a advance to probably the regional final or so, or the regional semis if they play Maryland, where they probably won't have enough to go by them. But they're still exciting. I mean, you're the champ until somebody beats you, right? Isn't that one of the old-time sayings? So they still are the champs until they lose that game in the NCAA tournament. I think also another interesting story about down there, you have obviously A&M and Arkansas, but also how about Louisville and Maryland potentially with Jeff Walls going head coach and Brandon Freeze. And 2 years ago or 3 years ago, Louisville ended Maryland's run. So the two teams definitely know each other down there. I don't think you can do it again in College Park, but it should make an interesting second-round matchup for TV at least. And Gulf Coast, man, they are exciting to watch. If you like the three-ball, they are a team that loves to shoot it, and they kind of win by the three, die by the three. And it should be interesting, and Mel talked about St. Bonnie's a little bit, but I think they're a team that could surprise you because there isn't much film on them. They're not a team that's really been on the radar much at all. They just moved to D1 this year. To me, they're somewhat similar to South Dakota State a couple of years ago when they made their move to Division I, that they may win a game or two in this tournament and be one of those Sweet 16 teams that no one really figured had a chance to get there just because people aren't used to seeing them. I mean, I think they haven't played too many teams outside of their conference that were really that good, so that there's no test to see, wow, how good is this team really in the scheme of things. But that three can really be a great equalizer in, I think, most games, and they hit it pretty well. I think they lead the nation in three-point attempts and three-point makes. So they're a team that could cause some problems for St. Bonnie's in the first round and then either Georgia or Marist in the second round if they get there.
You know, one of the things in that region also that I want to point out is – you know, not to fight any of the other regions that we've discussed, but you look at some of the coaching talent that is in that region that people may not necessarily know about. Obviously, people know about Freeze and McGraw, but, you know, Walls has done a great job at Louisville and is really, you know, his name keeps surfacing, even if it's just Gino Auriemma throwing it out there all the time and causing trouble. But between Georges and Smesko and Crowley, I mean, these are some tremendous young coaches that really have some great, great skills that are really going to be able to do some fun things, I think, with their teams. I think that regional is going to be a lot of fun to watch because of the newness and the mid-major side that help put things into a little bit of a new perspective, as well as having A&M as the defending champion and the Irish being in there. But then there's the Des Moines region is definitely fascinating. With the best in the country with Baylor, then you've got the Pat Summit story, the Deladon and the Blue Hens story. You've got Ohio State being probably the most underseeded team in the tournament, in my opinion. Kansas, who doesn't deserve to be in the tournament, in my opinion. And, you know, a number of other interesting upstarts like Georgia Tech, people didn't, and Brigham Young, and it could be a lot of fun, the Des Moines region. But, you know, first, you know, Angela, you know, Brittany Griner has become all of that in a bag of chips this year. Is there any doubt in your mind that she's the best player in the country?
No doubt at all. I mean, she's the most unique player that we've seen in the game for a long time. I mean, you talk about Lisa Leslie, you talk about, you know, Ann Donovan, a dominant player on both ends of the court, continues to get better. And so it's been great to see her development, her maturity, the way her teammates understand how to utilize her on the court. And, you know, I mean, it's difficult. If you're a team that hasn't seen her, like a Big 12 team, or some of the other out-of-conference teams that have played her over the last couple of years, how do you plan for this? You know, there aren't a lot of teams that schematically would know how to address that or even have the size to match up with it. And so, you know, it's been great to see her development and her progress over the last couple of years. But I think that she's complemented by some tremendous guard play as well, as Odyssey continues to develop and mature. You know, Kim's done a great job coaching that team.
You know, the offensive development of Griner, especially things like the foul line jumper, are just amazing to watch. And she's become, yeah, they were making the statement, it seemed, that Kara Watson said that she's the best center in the world right now. Now, I don't know if I would quite go that far, or Sylvia Fowles might take a little offense. But she's certainly right there. She's definitely one of the top ones. Now, Wendy, yeah, the other interesting saga, of course, is which Lady Vols and Pat Summitt team are going to be going to Des Moines and actually starting out in Chicago. Is it going to be the team that was so good and so strong and confident in the SEC tournament, or is it going to be the one that lost to Virginia?
Well, yeah, question, and this team, this is a senior-oriented team, and, you know, for the last 3 years, they haven't gone to the Final Four, and nobody wants to, you know, be the first senior class to go through at Tennessee and not get to a Final Four. They've got all kinds of things, you know, that are on their plate in addition to that, and just everything around the, you know, the future of Summitt and how long she's going to be coaching there. They really did look good in the SEC tournament, but, they play really good two or three games, and then they look really, you know, really, they kind of regress a bit after they had that big win over Kentucky. They fell back, and they won at Mississippi State and Ole Miss, but they didn't really look very good doing it, and they really can't afford to have, you know, lapses like that, as they progress. I really think it's interesting. You're talking about Summitt's, you know, what her future may be, how long she may be coaching, and she gets to go up against her alma mater first game. I think that's kind of interesting. And certainly playing Chicago, playing DePaul in Chicago potentially would be an interesting matchup too. But they didn't, you know, this bracket is really tough. You know, the other team I watched down here is Georgia Tech. They're the 4 seed. And that's the highest seed they've ever had. And Michelle Joseph was thrilled about that. But, boy, that's a really tough regional. At least they get to play on an ACC floor in Chapel Hill. But a potential second-round matchup with Georgetown would be a really physical, you know, defensive-oriented game.
Well, let's talk about Georgia Tech for a second now that Wendy steered us in that direction. Oren, you've seen them play against Duke and other ACC teams in conference, and they did also have a very strong conference tournament performance. Can you talk for a second about this team and how that conference the tournament performance is going to help buoy them some?
Yeah, I think it's really going to give them a lot of confidence after some not quite so strong postseason performances in past years. This is a team that's never been to the Sweet 16, and they have a really good chance to get there this year. They've got Sasha Goodlett, who is just a punishing player. She had great games in the ACC tournament. She came very close to fouling out Maryland's entire front line single-handedly in that game. And I still believe that if they had kept on pounding the ball into her, if they'd been able to, that they might have been cutting down the nets a couple Sundays ago in Greensboro instead of Maryland. They've also got Ty Marshall, who's a very unique player in that she's a master of the medium-range jumper, that she has a step-back shot from the elbow And she was just on fire in the ACC tournament, especially against against NC State in the semifinals. Tech shot almost 70% in that first half. So, you know, a team that in the past has had a reputation as a defensive team has suddenly found some firepower, and that's really dangerous. That said, certainly a big battle against Georgetown, but their road would probably end if they face Baylor.
I will tell you that I'll tell both of you that having seen Georgetown several times and being a big fan of Sugar Rogers, I will tell you that Fresno State is going to knock them out in the first round. This is not a very good Georgetown team. It is. You've heard about teams that are the one-player show. Sugar Rogers gets a bad rap about being a volume shooter because she has no choice. There is no one on that team that can put the ball in the basket with the exception of Sugar Rogers. And she can only do so much. And I'm amazed that they did as well as they did this season in conference. With their inability to put the ball in the basket. Doug will vouch for what I'm saying when I say that we saw perhaps a game in the Big East tournament that could have set women's basketball back 35 years with the performance that Georgetown had in that game. So,
why, you're not a fan of 39-32 finals? That doesn't get you excited for the growth of the game?
I that is a score I could live with, but I think it was the 14% shooting for the game that really reflected poorly on the state of affairs.
Yeah, at home we're able to change the channel.
This is true. But Doug, as long as I do have you, though, Jim Foster today was positively irate about their seeding, and I really liked the fire that he showed in talking about how offended he was at where their team was seated. Why was Ohio State, in your opinion, seated so low? And, you know, what kind of impact can that have for them for at least a game and a half?
Well, at least for the first game, they'll be fired up for that. I don't know if they could have been seated 16 and have to play Baylor. I don't think it really matters as far as how much upset he is as far as the NCAA committee goes. But, they have a really talented backcourt. I mean, Samantha Perhalis is probably among the top three most exciting players in women's basketball today. She just brings that flash with her when she makes passes or goes to the basket. I mean, she's someone that if I was a fan, I would go out and pay to watch her because she just brings that much excitement to the game. But for the first time in a while, Ohio State doesn't really have a huge post presence, and I just don't think that they have enough firepower. I mean, they'll probably get through the first round. I mean, Florida should be a game they should win whether they were fired up or not. But I got to think that with Hill and Perhalis, they have probably one of the top three or four backcourts in the country right now. They just have not much on the inside to go along with it. He has every right to be fired up. I mean, the Big Ten had seven teams get in the tournament, a record seven teams get in, and they were one of the better ones, yet they're seeded eighth. So you have to wonder about that. But I think if you polled, David, all the coaches across the country who are in the NCAA tournament right now, how many of them would actually be happy with their seeding? Half? Less than half? I mean, there's always going to be some gripe and some way to fire their team up. But I think Foster in the past, the NCAA committee doesn't really do it, but if you look at past history, why give them a 5 or 6 when they tend to fall short of their ranking in the past? So maybe being an 8 seed might be enough to get them fired up to win the first round, and then who knows, maybe give Baylor a good first half because they do have the backcourt that could control the tempo, could control the game, and maybe make it difficult for Baylor for at least 20 minutes to maybe have to struggle a little bit.
I sometimes wonder if that foursome wasn't, you know, you heard Greg Christopher talk last night about wanting to protect the number one seeds, so they put Baylor in a place where the host team isn't there. But then you want to have the local draw, so you bring Ohio State over. I didn't hear what he or anybody on the committee said about whether or not they moved Ohio State, you know, moved their seed to fit that or not. But I kind of wonder if that's sort of a clash of two sentiments that they had there, to protect the number one seed, but to also make sure that you know, somebody shows up, some fans show up for those games.
Isn't that the committee chair's home school?
Yeah. he's the Bowling Green Athletic Director.
Yeah. I wonder if he recused himself from that discussion.
I don't know, but that just seems to be more of a discussion about how these teams are being moved around rather than, you know, who got in and who got out, and I don't know. I mean, I thought Ohio State deserved a higher seed, but there really wasn't another close by team to send there, you know, that had any kind of a fan base that I can see.
Yeah, but then the other side of that is we look at Chapel Hill and see what they did there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think I would rather have had Baylor as the, you know, at least if I have Baylor coming in, yeah, that,
right,
there's at least a ticket draw, as opposed to, no offense to Georgia Tech, but, you know, like I said, I don't think Sacred Heart really travels very well. China, one of the things that intrigues me about this region is I'm kind of interested in and what I like about Nebraska is they've got the big forward in Jordan Hooper that can shoot both inside and outside, and then they've got one of the best point guards in Lindsey Moore. Can you tell, for one second, the combination of that guard and forward is so important to seeing a team succeed, that combination. Can you talk for a second about what that means to a team, you know, being able to have those two positions that they can count on?
Yeah, I mean, it means everything because it gives you options. You can spread the floor. I think where we see the growth in the women's game is that we now have four players averaging double figures and even sometimes, you know, close to five. And the places on the court where these teams can score is continuing to grow, whether it's Brittany Griner from above the rim or the extended three-point shot. So we're really dealing with the evolution of the game. So those two positions are very you need them. You need to have inside-outside balance. But, you know, I like Nebraska, and I actually have my eye on the matchup if they end up with Delaware. And I'll tell you why. They still play a Big 12 style in terms of the way that they can press. They've got some really exciting freshmen. They're a young team, but they're athletic, and I think that's why they've had success in the Big 10 so early. And you know, I'm interested to see how Delaware's guards respond, if that matchup does happen, to that athleticism. But I think Moore has done a terrific job for Connie Yori, and you talked about Hooper, but I just – my hat's off to her, because when you look at the team, she's got about a 10-player rotation, and about six of those players are freshmen. And so it's just been a great year there.
Oh, yeah, there was that other team that I did forget about mentioning, those blue people. Mel, I think you know a little something about you know, that player they got there, that one with three names.
I'm trying to think who you're talking about. Karak? Yeah. Yes, Deladon. And it is 3 days. Took us a while when she got there just to make people understand it's not two names. But, you know, they've been coming along since she got there. You look at the blueprint, you know. I mean, obviously, as I've said, the best recruiting sentence of all time was uttered by Tina Martin. My office is down the hall. If you have some interest, feel free to stop by. And she came in for volleyball. But, you know, the key when you look to the future, when she got here freshman year, was they're going to need some pieces, and they got that with, you know, with Lucas and the other transfer. And they actually got a transfer from George Washington and Kayla Miller, who went to school at Bristol Line Academy in Wilmington with Oina. You know, and then they built the schedule because, you know, they didn't know they were going to wake up one day when Elena came in as going to be a freshman. They were trying to fight back from two bad years off of a recruiting hiccup, you know, after they had won 19 or 20 for years. So, you know, and now they've kind of molded together, and they have other options too. So, you know, as you say, I mean, Elena just takes a beating in that conference and in terms of defenders. But now people are going out there starting to play up honest a little bit, depending on who's looking at the film, because the other guys are starting to contribute.
I'll tell you, I don't think there's two players in the country that are more pounded on than her and Griner. There's no doubt about it in my mind. Mel, can they beat Tennessee?
Can they beat Tennessee? Maybe you should ask Wendy, because I think the question comes as much from the Tennessee side, because there are days that Tennessee doesn't show up. And you know what? If you look over the years of emotions with kids and things and what's going on, if they get to that game on the Tennessee side, that's one game from playing Baylor, one game from playing for the game to go to the Final Four, the whole business of trying to win a title for Pac Summit. It's kind of like the old days, which Wendy kind of remembers when she came in, when people were hosting Final Fours and there was an innate pressure to get to your own gym because they were still looking for the big crowds we've come to accept. And there were teams like Texas in 85 that got upset, and, you know, Dawn Staley's one of the early Virginia teams beat Tennessee in 91. So, you know, on the floor, you would go with Tennessee. But if you start getting all the extracurriculars and things like that, and, you know, Delaware's playing just a patient play their game, and suddenly the wheels start to come off a bit of Tennessee, is there panic, you know, and what happens there? So I think it's more, could it happen? Possibly. I mean, I wouldn't bet my whole life in Vegas that it's going to happen, but I think it will be, and it would be a very interesting game if it happens.
You know, Wendy, one of the matchups that could potentially be interesting against Deladon, as we talk about the physical play that she's had to deal with, is I don't know, other than Alyssa Thomas, if she's faced anybody like Glory Johnson.
Yeah, Glory Johnson, I mean, she gets the defensive call against, you know, big-time scorers and her size. She's about the, you know, same height, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". And, you know, Tennessee's got a lot of depth. They can, you know, put more than one person on her. They're going to mix, you know, they're going to mix up defenses all the time. You know, this is a really seasoned Tennessee team and very athletic and very, I mean, defensively they've had some lapses this year, though. It's been really a surprise. You know, they gave up 93 points to Vanderbilt, among other things. So, you know, you just really don't know when you get into a pressure situation, a Sweet 16 kind of a game, and everything that Tennessee has been dealing with, and, you know, dealing with playing against a Delaware team that really doesn't have anything to lose. It's just, you know, in some rarefied air. It would be really fascinating to see that. But, you know, I think that, you know, Glory Johnson could shut her down if that's what had to happen. I just, you know, she's done it so many times, and I would like Tennessee in that game just because of the athletic ability and the size and the number of bodies that they could you know, put to that task.
All right. Well, we've touched on each of the regions here, and so for the sake of keeping this in a reasonable time frame, I want to go around and I want to get opinions on Final Fours, players to look for, and the like, and we'll just do this in a rapid-fire type thing. You know, I'll ask a question and ask each of you to give me a response. And don't worry, nobody remembers predictions once the tournament's over. So, LaChina, start the Final Four and your eventual champion. Do you see anything other than chalk?
Well, obviously, I've got Baylor as far as my Final Four. I do believe that Stanford will advance. I like Connecticut. And then, you know, the Notre Dame-Maryland discussion is interesting to me. You know, I really like the way Brenda Freeze's team is playing. She's won a national championship with freshmen and sophomores before. She's got a very talented sophomore class. That could be trouble. They also have nothing to lose. I think Notre Dame, we saw a little bit of pressure on their faces in the Big East tournament. So that would be interesting. But my eventual, you want me to say my winner, my champion right now? I would say Baylor for sure.
Okay, Doug, same question.
I agree with the China. I mean, I can't think the chalk won't make it to the Final Four. I think it will be an interesting every other game. I think we see a lot of upsets throughout the tournament, not with the number one seeds, just because of home court advantage, whatever it may be. But it's tough to go against the chalk this year. And those four teams have really set themselves apart all season long as being the best four teams in the country. And I'd be hard-pressed to see them losing before the Final Four. barring some crazy injury or something that no one could predict. But, yeah, I think you'll be seeing a lot of ones. I think the first time since 89. Mel will probably remember that one better than I can, but that the four number ones made the Final Four in Denver. And if you want a champion, I picked them the last 3 years, might as well keep it consistent. I got to like UConn. I think they're peaking at just the right time, and he has a way of beating a team the second time he plays them, and probably no other coach in the country besides Kim Mulkey knows more about Brittany Griner than Gino Auriemma. So why not? Let's go UConn for the NCAA champions.
Excellent point about Auriemma coaching her over the summer. Angela, same thing.
I'm pretty much going with chalk, but I do think that the two regions that will be intriguing are the Raleigh region with Maryland and Notre Dame. You know, I think that can go either way, but I am picking Notre Dame to come out of that region. And then the Fresno region with the potential Duke-Stanford matchup, I think that they match up very well. So, you know, either one of them can come out of that. But, you know, my eventual champion, you know, like Tara would kill me if I said anything else otherwise. But, you know, I'm going to pick Stanford. I think that, you know, NECA is a senior, and this is her last chance. She's been there every year and has come up short. And so I think that she's going to be extra motivated to pull it out. And I think that they match up well with each of those teams and have the ability to strategically you know, defend a Baylor team.
Warren?
I think I definitely see Baylor and UConn in the championship. I think Baylor will come out on top in that one. As far as the other two regions, I see Notre Dame and Maryland as a 50-50. I see Stanford over Duke as probably a 60-40. So I'd be sure about Baylor and UConn.
Wendy? Oh, I assume Warren Baylor to win?
Yes, sir.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say, I hate to use the cliche, it's the Baylor's to lose, but they really have separated themselves, you know, from the pack. You know, what Doug was saying about a potential rematch with UConn. I mean, you know, if there's one coach who could figure out what to do, I think Gino would be the one. And as far as all number one seeds getting there, well, you know, it hasn't happened in 20-plus years. I don't think I'll do what the president did and pick – I think he picked St. John's to get out of Fresno. I think the number one seeds have really, you know, demonstrated their dominance, and you know, maybe Maryland could get out of Raleigh, but I see the other three number one seeds moving on to Denver.
And Mel,
did you call?
Hi, Mel.
It's all right. I didn't hear for sure because I just got to a place. I got to do a lot of paperwork in Ballard County tonight, so I stepped outside in traffic. I'm always in traffic. Well, I'd same thing, chalk, and I gotta think that as close as Connecticut played the last time, had a shot to beat Baylor, give them a second shot. Gino doesn't have to do much, so if that team comes to play, I think you could see an upset and Connecticut winning it.
Very good. I'm going to pick chalk, and I am going to say that Notre Dame is going to beat UConn again this time, and I think that Baylor will win a close one over Notre Dame. I still think that Notre Dame is the one team that has a shot at beating them. If Peters can keep her head in the game and Kayla McBride can continue to perform at the level she can along with Higgins and Novosel, I think that Notre Dame is going to be a very, very tough team to beat this year, and we'll make it to the finals. So, going in the other direction, who is going to be, which team when you look at this, who's your bigger, you think is going to be a surprise, and who do you think is going to be a disappointment? And we'll reverse it this time. Mel, can you go first this time?
Oh, no. Can I pass and come back there? I got to think about this a bit, because
We'll let you, Mel. As long as Wendy doesn't mind, because she's next.
Oh, thanks, Mel. You know, I wonder about Kentucky. Not just the things we were talking about earlier, but you know, they've got to go to Ames, and you know, they beat McNeese State, which I would imagine will happen. Then you've got Green Bay and Iowa State. Iowa State would have a great home crowd there. I think Kentucky can get through to the Sweet 16, but you know, then it's possibly Miami. I'm not sure Kentucky is going to be long for this tournament. I like them, but I just kind of wonder about them. As a surprise team, gosh, you know, I may get in trouble with with Andy, but I, you know, St. Bonaventure may be out of Tallahassee. I know they're a five seed, but I like what they do, and you know, that wouldn't be a big surprise as a Sweet 16 team. But you know, some people would think so if they have to beat a team like Georgia to get there.
Warren,
go ahead.
I think for surprises, I really like what Marist has back this year, and I like what Coach Georges has done with that team. So I think they could be another surprise this year. They were a heartbeat away from beating Duke, certainly they lost Allenspach, but the rest of the core of their team is back. I think Miami could be a surprise. I think I could see Miami in the regional final, and certainly I agree that Kentucky seems like possibly the most vulnerable of the two seeds. That could possibly clear the way. I also like South Dakota State.
Really?
Yeah, I think they could. I think they could give them a real good game.
You just like saying the Jackrabbits.
I think everybody does this time of year.
Okay, Angela.
You know, I think that there's going to be an extraordinary amount of pressure on Tennessee. And, you know, certainly, you know, potentially in that second round, match it with DePaul, match it with Delaware. I think that there's going to be an extraordinary amount of pressure on them. And, you know, they've been inconsistent this year, so I would not be surprised to see them have a disappointing performance in the tournament. Would love nothing better than to see them have a nice run, but wouldn't be surprised to see them out. And I agree with a couple of the previous statements about Miami. You know, the tournament is about guard play, and, you know, they have two of the most explosive guards in the tournament that can really, you know, put the ball in the basket. So I would not be surprised to see them upset Kentucky and make it to the regional final and have a chance to, you know, play UConn.
Doug.
I think we've had some really good statements so far already. I really like Miami to have a nice run. And Angela just said, I mean, guards win games in the tournament, and they got a really, really good backcourt. I said it before, I think 4 months ago or 3 months ago, when I was doing the shoot around with Beth and Debbie, that I thought Delaware could make a huge run this year. And from the TV standpoint, and the China knows better than I do, I can't think that ESPN wouldn't mind seeing a Delaware-Tennessee regional semifinal. And then if Delaware beats them, either way they're fine, but then have potentially the best two players in the country going up against each other. And Deladon and Griner in the regional final in Des Moines would be a heck of a TV matchup, so to speak. So, I mean, Delaware's a three, but they're the team I think can make a run with a star player. Star players tend to win games if they're not guards, but they definitely tend to win games, and they got one of the best in Deladon. Disappointments, I think Kentucky's a good point there. Georgia's got a bad history of NCAA troubles, it seems. They've done well the last 2 years. I think Rutgers, I mean, that was a team coming in I was really high on. I mean, I saw them the first month and a half of the season. I was really impressed with them. They lost to Miami in double overtime at Miami. They lost to Tennessee. You're like, okay, they're pretty good, but they haven't gotten any better. And that's not a normal staple of Vivian Stringer, her teams. They usually tend to coast into the Christmas break. They get beat up early on by a bunch of top 25 teams, and then she gets them going the right direction from the Big East tournament and the Big East regular season, and then you can run the NCAAs. I think this group seems to be going the other way, and I could see them maybe getting knocked out by Gonzaga at home in the first round.
Well, China.
I'm just going to go off the cuff a little bit here and just make a random decision. But I'm going to go against geography, and I'm going to say St. John's makes it out of Norman. I think that Penn State will make it out of Baton Rouge, and I'm going to go on a limb and say Arkansas makes it out of College Station.
All good choices. Ooh. I had all of those marked off as potential upsets, absolutely. So who's going to lay an egg?
Who's going to lay an egg? I guess if that's not enough for the home teams,
Who's going to lay an egg?
Well, we can let you go with Texas A&M being a 3 getting knocked off there at home.
I think those are pretty significant. Again, going against geography, yeah, Oklahoma, yeah, St. John's, you can see that. I think, you know, Penn State to go to Baton Rouge would be an upset, obviously, and come out with that against the LSU team that made it to the SEC championship, and then Arkansas making it out of College Station.
Mel, are you ready?
Yes, although I think we're trying to evade the mind steal. I would agree with people in Kentucky every year, all year long, every time they look like the real deal and you really got high on them and you started feeling good about what they might do, they've crashed. So maybe they're the new Ohio State in this tournament. And I'll give my friend something else to get mad about. And so we all know the history. And, I kind of thought about St. John's, too. You know, they haven't really had their whole team together until late in the season. It's a heck of a thing if you could go up to UConn and win a game there the way they did on senior night, no less. So if they get on a run, I can see them doing some things. And, you know, if Penn State, I kind of agree with China there, too. If Penn State gets it all together, you know, Maggie Lucas is another one of those just great scorers and great shooters. So if they can play some defense and get some firepower, they can be a surprise by lasting a little longer than people think.
And I'm going to similarly say Kentucky may be the first one to fall, but I'm going to tell you that I think Green Bay is going to be the team that comes out of that whole section, including beating Miami. I'm going to pick them as being one of the upstarts. And y'all stole my thunder. You know I like Brian Georges and what he does with Marist. All of you guys mentioned it early on. If people don't know Coryell Yard yet, they will, because she is very similar to an Arminty Price type of guard, where she gets a lot of strong rebounds, and she can shoot the three now as well. Marist is... They're not nearly as good as the teams with Fitz and Allen Spa, but they are a very solid team, and I think they fit in nicer this year in the brackets than they do in prior years. So I think that Marist could surprise some people too. So now I'm going to put you all on the spot for individual talent. So tell me who's going to be the – give me two players, and Brittany Griner and Elena Deladon don't count. Okay, NECA doesn't count. We know about them. Okay, who have you seen that's going to jump out of each of those regions? Give me one or two players that people should be looking for. And because that takes a little bit more looking at it, I'll actually start this one. In Des Moines, I had mentioned her before. Keep an eye on Jordan Hooper out of Nebraska. She's got a combination of inside-out game as a sophomore that is a lot of fun to watch. When you go down to Fresno, you guys have been mentioning St. John's. Well, DeShayna Stevens is a senior that has had quite an impact in terms of leadership there, but their point guard, Nadira McKenna, was slighted and should have been on the Lieberman list, in my opinion, and a candidate for winning that award. When you look at Kingston, obviously Julie White has been mentioned many times over as somebody that you need to look at, but I'm going to mention Naveen Rashid from Princeton is somebody that unfortunately will have a short stay, but is somebody worth watching. And when you get to the Raleigh region, I did mention Coryell Yard already is somebody to keep an eye out for. And the other one, you know, maybe is a little better known, but, you know, Shoni Schimmel is either going to shoot Louisville into the second round or is going to shoot him out of the second round, and I'm not sure which one it's going to be yet. So on that note, LaChyna, can we start with you?
Sure. This is tough because there's so many great players, but I would say in Des Moines, look out for Jennifer George from Florida. Terrific post player, has been solid down low. I don't know any post that plays as strong as she does on the low block, just gets position with no problem. Keep your eyes on her. And then I would also say Anna Martin of DePaul, who has just been fantastic and is a lot of fun to watch on the perimeter for them. In Fresno, I like Markeisha Grant from South Carolina, as Wendy mentioned, you know, has hit some big shots for them, especially at Thompson Bowling. for them to get that win against Tennessee. And it's really going to be fun if she ends up matched up against Brittany Rayburn of Purdue. Just naming two out of Fresno, I think Rayburn is so tough. I love watching her. I mean, she never gives up on a play. She's just so determined. She's one of those kids that'll just run through a wall to get it done. So those are the two I like there. And then in Kingston, I think Kia Stokes is going to come up big as the backup for Connecticut. You haven't heard her name a lot, but I like her build. She reminds me of a Tyson Chandler type player. You know, Dolson definitely has the offense, but she runs the floor better, and I think she's a great defender and rebounder as well. So I think she'll be key if Connecticut is able to make the run, as we all suspect that they will. And then for Miami, I would say Stephanie Yiderstrom, the three-point shooter for Miami. You know so much about Johnson and Williams and what they do, but she's really come on strong towards the second half of the season and asserted herself as that third option, and I think she'll be a lot of fun to watch if they can make their run. And then Raleigh, I mean, it's hard to go against Alyssa Thomas just because she was so underrated to start the season. I mean, she's one of the best small forwards in the country right now. I mean, she's that good, and they call her Baby LeBron, and for good reason. She's physically dominant. I mean, she's so strong. She has great balance. You know, her base is just tremendous in terms of what she can do. And then I think last but not least, and this may be a dead giveaway, but I just think we don't hear her name enough, and that's Kayla McBride. When you look at key wins for Notre Dame, that young woman and the poise that she's had after missing a lot of last season because of personal reasons, she's slid right in the starting lineup for them and has hit big shots. And, I mean, at times where it looked like no one else wanted to take them, she moved so well without the basketball. So I'm sorry if I cheated and gave two players out of each region, but that's my list.
You just wanted to be able to show that you could pronounce all those things.
I didn't even get to the hard ones.
Okay. Doug.
Oh, I'm up. I don't know if there are any players left. You guys have named all the really good ones.
Hey, I only think two from each region.
Well, I got to agree. I think McBride's the biggest thing for Notre Dame. I mean, she played last year. I think they're the defending national champions, because I think she was the difference maker, would have been the difference maker in their loss to A&M in the title game. So she might be the missing link that gets them to the title game again and gets them over the hump if they can get by UConn in the Final Four. I like Yard. I've seen her play. I like Thomas. I mean, there's so many good ones in the Raleigh region that you guys have already named. It's tough to come up with another one potentially. Kingston, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's – Yiderstrom is a really talented guard. I saw her first breakout game against Maryland, and she was on fire. I mean, she had 26, was hitting all over the court, and is really, really good and has been carrying on ever since. So she's a really talented player. Rasheed, I've seen. I mean, she makes Princeton go. She was out with the ACL last year, and that's kind of what hurt them in their NCAA tournament bid or their NCAA tournament game. I think she'll get them through the first round this year, just having her back and healthy, and she can do pretty much anything. And she was actually a Stanford recruit potentially, so she's got the talent to play at the top level, and she's doing it all season long as the Ivy League Player of the Year. In the Fresno region, you stole my girl, Madeira McKenneth, Dave. She is phenomenal. She was robbed by not being in the Lieberman finalist. She handles the ball. As Gino said, you can't get it out of her hands, and she can control a game. So she could be the difference maker for them to get through for a while. If she doesn't and they do lose, I like Whitney Hand on Oklahoma. She's had a great career for them so far, and she can shoot the three ball pretty well. So she's a name that could cause some trouble for people down the road if they can get out of that first two rounds and get by St. John's. And you said my favorite player in college basketball right now, Anna Martin of China. She is something to watch for DePaul. Doug Bruno at the Big East tournament said he wanted to try to fill the stands up in Chicago with 17,000 people, and having Tennessee there might just do it. And I think Anna might be able to shoot them past them. I mean, if DePaul gets by BYU, and I think it might be one of the best games of the first round, two really, really talented teams, whoever wins that might give Tennessee a good game. And if it is DePaul, it will be Anna Martin who might be able to carry them past them. I mean, she can also shoot the lights out, and I think she had 33 in the Big East tournament in their win. And I think just those are the ones I go with, besides the ones you've already named, that could really be a name, not Brittany Griner, not Elena Deladon, not Skylar Diggins or Nneka Ogumike, who people might think, wow, this girl can really play.
Angela.
Well, you guys have covered quite a few names.
You know, I'll start in the Raleigh region. You know, my West Coast bias a little bit. I think a point guard that Tara talked quite a bit about is Cal's point guard, Brittany Boyd, an exciting player who, you know, if they do make it out of that first round and have a chance to go up against a Notre Dame, you know, I think that she'll be on display. One of the best passers in the game, has a great feel for the game, can score, not a great shooter, but great off the dribble and setting her teammates up. And, you know, I haven't really seen a lot of point guards come in as freshmen that have the court awareness that she has. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing her. You know, there's Sierra Ricketts for Arkansas. I think that, you know, a lot of people have talked about Arkansas maybe upsetting Texas A&M and going further. So definitely see those guys. In the Des Moines region, I mean, you know, I think that Taylor Hill is somebody that intrigues me. You know, she's kind of been in Prowse's shadow a little bit. When she faces a Baylor team potentially in that second round, you know, she's going to be guarding their best perimeter player. So I think that she does a great job on the defensive end. She's somebody that we should definitely look at. Fresno region, you know, I think that Bonnie Samuelson from Stanford is somebody that has to play well for this team to succeed. She's a great three-point shooter. She opens up the floor for the Gumke sisters. And I look for her. She's shooting 37, 38% from the three-point line. I look for her as a freshman to have a significant role for their success. And I think people talked about it, but the guards from Miami, you know, I love watching those two play. But not a lot of people across the country have had a chance to see, you know, a couple of people that probably go in the top five, top ten in the WNBA draft.
Excellent. Oren?
Gosh, there's. It seems like we've gone through just about every roster. Certainly, I was going to say Yard from Marist. Last year, she went off for 25 and 12 against Duke. Certainly, Mincy from Maryland. I think she. I think she could be a difference maker. Both of those in the Raleigh region. In the Kingston region, an interesting player is who might make a little bit of noise. I don't think she'll be around for long. Is Chelsea Hopkins from San Diego State. 5'8 guard, Duke transfer, who had just a devastating knee injury, has come back from that to average 10 points, 6.5 assists, and 5.7 rebounds for a 5'8 guard. And it's not surprising that she's excelling because her coach is none other than former Virginia star Tammy Reese. So I think I'm going to pass on Des Moines. I think we've already heard about Georgia Tech and what they can do. I will note that certainly Williams and Gray for Duke are already received many accolades, but interesting that both of those players scored triple-doubles this year. So either of them can really just turn it on and take over a game.
Wendy.
Well, out of Des Moines, was talking about Sasha Goodlett at Georgia Tech. Just how much she's improved over the course of her career is really, really remarkable. She came in as a big body who needed some conditioning and has done that. And you know, should they play Baylor in the Sweet 16? I don't know if they can stop them, but I just think it would be a really intriguing matchup because she really has gotten so much better over the course of her career. In the Fresno region, they're going to be playing at home in Vanderbilt. Christina Foggie has just been a real revelation. She didn't play much last year with concussions. Led the SEC in scoring this year, and you know, I think for Vanderbilt to have a chance to have a good run, they really need her to play well. They're still a very young team; they're not very deep, but she's got a great offensive game, and when she's on a roll, they're a really fun team to watch, and they're kind of tough to beat. In Raleigh, Sierra Ricketts of Arkansas, you know, she's got the kind of game that if they had to play, you know, Texas A&M and their physical athletic defense, she can really break down defenses really well. And in Kingston, I love the jump shot of Maggie Lucas of Penn State. I think that she's also a fun player to watch. And so those are four players I'll be here to see how they fare. I think.
Sounds good. Now.
Well, most of the names are gone, so I'll just fill in if St. Bonnie's makes a bit of a run. It might be on Jessica Jenkins, who's a tremendous three-point shooter. You know, set the career record at school. Again, I like Lucas. Or he just talks. Funny how Duke's on these not one of those teams too that you always talk about, and they're there, but nobody's talking. But obviously Williams and Gray, you know, Duke goes over and beyond what they've done in the past. Those two players will be a factor, and you know, I like a few of those St. John's kids that were mentioned that sort of came to me right after I passed, and then everybody started grabbing the names. That's a few more.
Well, I'm just going to throw out there just to prove that I can pronounce a name, too. Let's not forget that St. Bonaventure has Megan Van Tottenhove on their team as well, and she's quite a player, too. So there.
Very nice, very nice.
I want to see the Dutch players play each other. I want to see St. Bonaventure's play Miami. All right, guys, it's time to bring it home. The way that we always like to do this at the end is I'm going to pass to each of you. You can each say whatever you would like to about the tournament or the season or whatever else you'd like to mention, and then just tell everybody where they can find you, be it on Twitter or be it on your website or your imprint. Before I pass to everybody else, let me first just say thank you to Jada, who had to leave, and remind everybody that she is at Jada Evans on Twitter, and of course you can find her covering the Seattle Storm and West Coast basketball at the Seattle Times. So, Doug, why don't we start with you?
Well, you said it well last time for me, Dave. I guess the best place to find me is at Doug Feinberg on Twitter, or anywhere across the country as far as the stuff goes with the Associated Press and the wonderful NCAA coverage of the tournament that hopefully we'll be providing over the next 3 weeks. And I really look forward to an exciting tournament being in Bridgeport, Kingston, and then the final destination of Denver, which I think will be a fun city for the Final Four the first time it's in the Mountain Time Zone.
Angela.
You can find me on Twitter at @networks_sports. And, you know, first, thanks for having us on the show, David. It's been great. It's been great listening to the excellent conversation around this year's tournament. I agree with Doug that the Final Four in Denver, Big Sky Country, I come from Idaho, is going to be exceptional. And, you know, looking forward to checking out some of these games as they start this weekend. For me, as far as what I have going on, I started a radio show called Game Changers Live. We're broadcasting every Wednesday at 1 o'clock. You can find us at GameChangersLive.com.
Oren.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter at DW Hoops and also on the web at dwhoops.com. We cover Duke and the ACC, a league that only put four teams in this year. After probably its weakest year in history, looking at in the past 6 years, only two teams above 150 in the RPI in the previous 6 years. This year there were three teams in the 200s. We're looking forward to better things for the ACC down the road.
Wendy.
My Twitter handle is W Parker, and my homepage is wendyparker.org. And obviously we've talked a lot about how big of a favorite Baylor is, but I really think that, you know, I think there are going to be a lot of surprises in this tournament, including some of the other top seeds. I think there might be a lot of, you know, really, really good balance in these brackets. The biggest surprise would be if Baylor doesn't get to the Final Four, but I think we're getting to a point where maybe some of these upsets really aren't going to really be upsets anymore. And the emergence of a lot of good mid-major programs this year, or the continuation of them, I think it's been really fun to watch. I think that's going to continue.
Wow.
Yes, Twitter handle is, surprise, at Juan Hoops Guru, WOMHOOPSGURE. Simple enough, if you just remember MelGreenberg.com, to get to the main blog, and then there's always directions here how to get back into the actual where stuff gets written in the archive when you get beyond the lead story. Occasionally, as the past several days, the newspaper I used to work for decides they need somebody to cover since they don't have anybody in there. So I usually alert there if there's a print story and it shows up on the website, silly.com, and it actually
with the new situation there and their latest change. It was amusing to see my name in the Daily News the last 2 days with the longtime rival sister paper with the, the CAA tournament and with the bracket announcement last night. So I think, as I said, there'll be a lot of upsets and in terms of the early rounds, we had three teams that got ranked this year that had never been ranked before. So it shows the growth continues and a lot from the mid-majors. And, at a certain point, we look at some of these mid-majors and they're really almost as good as BCS teams. So, I've always had a quibble about that terminology when it came along. I think good teams are good teams no matter where they're classified out.
Latina.
Yes, you can find me at Live2Inspire on Twitter, and I will be headed to the Comcast Center up in College Park for the first and second round. And then I am actually going to be serving as a reporter for Turner Sports at the Final Four, which I'm really excited about, and I think it's going to be mainly on for online content as far as recaps and feature work and stuff like that for the NCAA.com. And I think that's pretty much it. I just really want to say thank you, David, for continuing to do this, and just thank you to everyone that's a part of the roundtable. You know, you guys are the people that I look to growing up in this game, coming through college and before I even knew I wanted to get into media, and I know that what I'm doing right now is nothing but the result of the collective efforts of all of you who have worked so hard to continue to give women's basketball the exposure that it deserves, and I'm blown away every time I get to listen to your thoughts. And I know I have a lot of learning to do, but when I look at who has laid the foundation for our game, I feel encouraged that if some of us bringing up the rear can do half of what you guys have done, our game will be safe.
And let me just to echo what LaChina had just said, to concur, just having people like Wendy and Mel on this, in addition to everybody else, and Michelle Smith unfortunately had to drop out at the last second, and having people that are the real people that paved the way for the coverage that you're seeing today is great, and I'm honored to have you guys all as people to come on Dish and Swish. You can find me, of course, at Dish and Swish on Twitter and on Hoopfeed. There's now a Dish and Swish page, so you can find everything that I have, my spoken word and written word, in one place. The one thought that I'll leave you with is, yes, I think there's going to be a bunch of early round knockouts and some surprises, but I think in the end there's going to be a very happy television network, because I think they're going to get the Tennessee-Delaware matchup that they want. I think they're going to see the matchup with one of those two against Baylor, which is a no-lose. I think they're going to see the NECA Agumake versus Brittany Griner matchup. I think they're going to see Connecticut and Notre Dame one more time. All of the major matchups that they would love to see to drive ratings, I think they're going to get. And I think that that's going to be a good thing. And I think that that will help push this tournament and the coverage, hopefully, even further from the great job that they're already doing this year with ESPN and their family and network. So, everybody, thank you again for putting in as much time as you have tonight. I really appreciate it, and I know the listeners do.
Thanks,
David.
Thanks for having us, Dave.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful.